go, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's Nagler's Never Right, episode 4. We are taking a deep dive at the inside linebacker position for you Packers fans out there with a guy who I think, for my money, is one of the best evaluators in the draft business. His name is Eric Stoner. If you're not familiar with him, I've got him linked up there on the website. Check out his stuff over at Matt Waldman's site. It's great, great stuff. And later on, we'll be talking with senior writer at ESPN The Magazine, Mina Kimes. But let's kick things off with Eric taking a look at inside linebacker prospects for the 2015 NFL Draft.
Straight Stoner's anthem. A little something to smoke, too. Brought to you by BC Powder and your boy Snoop Dogg.
Eric, thanks so much for taking a few minutes and jumping on here with me.
Yeah, no problem, man. It's people act like they hate this time of year, but this time of year is actually I think it's the most interesting with all the smoke being blown around. Like the lead up right before the draft is when everything starts getting really crazy. We start breaking off of like arguing about individual guys and start trying to put the big picture together. So this is like the most fun time of year for me.
Absolutely. For people who maybe don't know your background, I know you coached at one point in your past. You coached linebackers specifically. Can you take us just a little bit into your background and how you came to be a draft analyst?
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a coach, so I was helping him cut film and everything before I ever even played. I started playing when I was 8, played all the way through high school, stopped playing after high school, and got into coaching. When I played growing up, I played offensive line and linebacker pretty much exclusively. Like, those were my two spots. Coached both of those positions after high school and everything, and then just started getting into the draft. I mean, really, really young. I think pretty much every draft Nick in the modern era has the same story of like they liked playing Madden and doing the draft and putting the team together more than playing the actual game. So I think like everybody kind of has that same story in this day and age. So got into that really, really young. Was always posting on message boards like Draft Countdown, Football's Future, and everything. And then that kind of spilled over into Twitter, and Draft Twitter's kind of taken life of its own, written for a bunch of different sites. Got out of the game for a while, got burnt out with it. And so actually got back into it this year, actually writing for Matt Waldman, RSP.
Yeah, and if listeners aren't familiar, the RSP, the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, is a must-have leading up to the draft. Still not too late to go get yourself a copy. It's fantastic work, as is Eric's stuff at Matt's site. I'll throw it up on the website on CheeseheadTV.com with a link so you guys can find it. Let's talk about linebackers. Obviously, this is a Packers site. You know linebackers. You know, looking at the guys that are available this year, it's funny watching people talk about first round, second round, etc. You know, I like what you do specifically because you're a guy who talks in tiers. You look at, you know, much like a team does, you look at guys, their abilities, how they might fit in certain schemes, etc. It was funny going back and researching what you've done in years prior. You know, that's the internet, baby. It's written in ink. And I'm going to give you one guess. Who is your lone first tier linebacker, inside linebacker in 2013?
Arthur Brown.
That is correct, sir. Which I just
a top three player for me, actually.
I just bring it up because you are by far and away one of the guys I respect the most when it comes to analyzing football players, especially at the linebacker position. And hell, we all miss on guys, and a lot of people missed on Arthur Brown. Although I thought it was interesting looking at that, you did have Alec Ogletree in the third tier, which I agreed with at the time. I remember thinking he was going to get way overdrafted, which I think he did. You look at guys this year, there's kind of a morass of guys, you've talked about it on Twitter, that I think, you know, have a bunch of varying skill sets, strengths, weaknesses, etc. I know Packers fans obviously are very keen on looking at these prospects. I'd love to get your thoughts on guys like Kendricks, McKinney, Anthony, Perryman, and then we'll get to your Dawson slander later.
I think this is something that that Justice Mosqueda and I were kind of talking about back and forth, and it's actually very, very similar to the 2013 running back class when you had a big cluster of guys grouped together. None of them were you would really like jump and pound and say, like, this is definitely a, like a complete player that we want to take in the first round. They have different strengths and weaknesses, and none of them is really what you would say is like a super, super complete player, but they're all definitely like solid NFL guys. And like, they're all kind of clustered together in that second round range. And so what I've said, and I said this on Sigmund's podcast earlier in the week, is that you don't really want to be the team that like, that starts the runoff and has to pick one out of this whole similar group of guys. You kind of want to take like, you want to do exactly like what the Packers did in the 2013 draft and take like a better, like a different player in the first round, like they did with Dayton Jones, and then kind of be the team to cap off that run at the end and be like the team to take like the last one of that's available, because you're not really going to see a whole bunch of difference in value probably in that big cluster of guys that goes in the second round. I mean, Kendricks is probably the most complete of the guys. He's still not a guy that I would say is like you would want as a sledgehammer guy in the middle. Like, he's more of a run and chase weak side linebacker, and he manages flow very well, running sideline to sideline. He can cover and everything, but like I said, he's not the bully type inside linebacker that maybe the Packers would more be looking for. Mm-hmm. After letting AJ Hawk go, I know they really only have Carl Bradford pretty much slated to be their starter as of if they would be lining up right now, correct?
Well, I think Bradford will get a shot in training camp to compete. He did look at least competent when they finally moved him inside during training camp last year. I still think, you know, they obviously haven't said anything, but I still think you're going to see Clay Matthews inside a whole bunch, especially on early downs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Bradford is actually a guy I liked coming out playing, like moving to an inside role, an off-ball linebacker role like that. Like, I didn't really think that he would be able to survive on that. He has athleticism and everything, but he just doesn't have the length to survive on the edge, I don't think.
And that played out in camp and in the preseason games last year.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, with him, I don't think that you don't have to panic and be the team to take the first linebacker off the board. You can kind of wait on it to the end of the second round where they're going to be. So, like I said, Kendricks is probably, unless they take him in the first round, probably he's probably going to be gone. And like I said, he's more of a run and chase Will type. Bernardrick McKinney, I think, would actually fit very, very well for them. He's actually got surprisingly good hip transition for a guy his size. If you make him change direction, but like, he can survive in coverage, but if you really like get him into, you don't want him, you know, detaching against tight ends or anything like that. But if you, he actually reminds me a lot of Vontaze Burfict, but with a little bit more length. Like, I think 4-3 teams would even like him as like a weak side linebacker, like how Vontaze has been used, as long as you don't have him dropping deep into coverage. And, you know, he can cover backs out of the backfield and stuff like that. And he can change directions and everything. And he's a bully inside. He gets off blocks. And when he sees the cutback lane, he fills it very, very hard. He's good at that. Stephon Anthony, he's my favorite of the group. I don't know if I would necessarily say that he's the best. He has recognition instinct issues like Ogletree did. He's actually very, very similar to Ogletree coming out. The reason why I like him so much more than Ogletree is he brings a level of physicality that Ogletree never had. Ogletree always played like he was a former safety, and he kind of always played linebacker like that. Like, he would be okay tackling running backs if he had a clear run through.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I said when he was coming out, is that he never met an attempted block that he couldn't try and go around rather than take on.
Exactly. And like, so when he had a clear run through and everything, he could blow it up in the backfield. Like, he would make those splash plays and everything, but like tight ends and fullbacks bodied him. Like, anytime you got anybody, a blocker got a body on him, he didn't handle contact well. He didn't like that. He was never comfortable with it. Whereas Anthony he's way more physical, but he has that length and that explosion and everything that Ogletree had.
He's so athletic. I loved you. I think Matt threw up on his site some cut-ups that you had pointed out of the press and cut technique. That's something I hadn't really thought of before, but it's really interesting to see how he does that.
Yeah, and it's like you see it more against teams that are running more gap scheme, because it's kind of harder to do it against a good zone offensive line, especially one like Georgia. Georgia's very good and patient at running their zone running game.
Sorry, I know, for listeners, can you describe just real quickly what that means, the press and cut?
Yeah, it's when, like I said, you have an offensive line that's coming hard off the line of scrimmage at the linebacker, and instead of the linebacker trying to scrape over the top, you press vertically against the line of scrimmage, and then by coming straight downhill like that vertically, it's going to take the offensive lineman right over the top of you, and then you can cut laterally down the line underneath him. And like I said, it works better against teams that are running more gap style plays where they're having offensive linemen come and fire off hard off the ball on their down blocks and getting to the second level, and the backside guys pulling like on power plays and counter plays and stuff like that. So it works better against that. It's kind of more difficult to do against zone teams because really good patient zone offensive lines they're very good at sustaining their double team at the first level and then letting the linebacker come to them instead of firing off so aggressively at the second level. So it's hard to cut underneath that because they're kind of sitting there waiting for you to do it. So Anthony had it was right after I did the Paul Dawson film room with Matt. Mm-hmm. And then that's where I kind of explained it with Dawson. Cause there was a game against Oklahoma, and Oklahoma runs a ton of gaps. So showed kind of some examples of Dawson doing it, and then the difference watching Anthony try and do it and showing that speed that he has and being able to press and cut down the line of scrimmage. And there's one good example of him doing it and one bad example of him doing it. So, yeah, like I said, he has the speed and the giddy up in his legs to pull off that press and cut, fill the cutback lane and explode through it before the running back even gets there. Flow down the line. Like, his flow management is kind of off right now. And like I said, he just has some instinctual problems and he's kind of a guesser more than a reader. So that's kind of the issue with him going forward. But if you believe that
is that something that can be coached out of him, or is that, I mean, I've always struggled with that because, you know, the draft obviously is all about projection and you're looking at these guys trying to see how they're going to fit, not only in the NFL in general, but in specific schemes, whatever team you're pretending to work for, in this case, the Packers. You know, is that when you're a guesser rather than, is that something you can, that coaches can, I don't know, not take advantage of, but try and either beat out of him or work around, or how does a coach attack that?
Well, the thing is that like an NFL defense is more complex from a scheme point of view. But it is easier in this instance in that a linebacker in an NFL defense can rely on his teammates so much more than one can in a college defense. Mm. That's kind of a like well-coached college defensive units, like you see them working as like a complete unit and everything, but that's more of a rare case than anything. You just tend to have a lot more players freelancing in college, either because they don't trust their teammates to be where they're supposed to be, or they're just like, whether they're reading the backfield and just flow into what they see or whatever. So it is different for every player. Some of them can end up picking up being able to read the offensive line through the running back. Some of them you just make it even simpler for them and you just tell them, you know, you're just going to flow with the back and you're going to get cloudy clear scraping rules. Like if you're just going to flow, and if you see a gap, you're going to shoot it. So there are things you can do to mitigate that. And like I said, just the way that that NFL defensive lines keep their linebackers way more clean than they do in college. And like I said, they can rely on their teammates to play responsibility football. So you can deal with a freelancer at linebacker a little bit better in the NFL. Right. It's just he still needs to have a nose for the ball at that point.
Now, I know you threw this out there on Twitter, and he is a divisive character amongst everyone who's, you know, watching prospects leading up to the draft. Where do you fall? Where ultimately did you fall on Shaq Thompson?
Shaq is he's an interesting player because I think he's just a role player in the NFL, but he could be very, very good at his role. I think he's strictly a linebacker, and where his value is you're going to be able to put him in man-to-man coverage in people in your nickel package. I wouldn't really trust him playing like a weak side linebacker role down to down, like in a base defense or anything. Like he might be able to develop into a nice run and chase player like that. Like he has those skills and everything, but where he's going to be able to match up right now is in man coverage, because right now I'd be worried about him and playing in base defenses and really playing against the run and things like that, is that he's kind of a spectator. He has a nose for the football in terms of like he'll be in the right place to recover fumbles and everything, but he's not active. Darren Page actually had a really good metaphor for this. Darren Page, he was like, I was like a 140-pound defensive back in high school, so I know like the actions and the mannerisms of a player that's actively trying to avoid make attack. Like he's trying to look busy but not get physically involved at all.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of the worry that I have about. I don't think he's shy from contact or not physical or anything. I just don't think that he likes to mix it up. And so he like I said, he could be a nickel linebacker for you, and you can use him in those sub packages and everything. He can detach with the more athletic tight ends and everything, and cover backs and man coverage and everything. I just don't think that he's going to ever be a player that you can rely on in your base defense.
And then we get to Mr. Dawson. Now, before we go any further on Paul Dawson, I just want you to know that, you know, I watched him and I recognize that, A, I am not an evaluator. I just watch guys who play football and I, you know, come up with my thoughts. But I loved him. I loved his tape. I recognize that he's not a first-tier guy. Right. But I think he could be very valuable, not just for the Packers, but for a team in the NFL. I think, you know, it's a question of valuation there. But I'm feeling all great about him, thinking, God, you know, that'd be a great day two pick, maybe day three, etc. And then I see you just go off on Twitter about how awful he is, and then, you know, you just make me feel bad, dude.
Yeah, here's my thing with Dawson, and, like, we will we'll agree that he's got a nose for the football. He can read and diagnose very quickly, especially like when he knows what play is coming and everything. And he makes a lot of those. It's kind of similar to Ogletree, where you see like when he knows what the play is coming and you can get him on a clear run through and everything, he's gonna make those splash plays. My question with him is that he's got a size and physicality knock. I think like he struggles bringing down bigger backs. Fullbacks and tight ends, he doesn't deal anytime you get any type of body on him, like he's either on the ground or he gets washed out of the play. So it's going to be very, very important to keep him clean and to give him clear run throughs and things like that. So he's got a size and physicality knock. He's got an athleticism knock, like,
yeah, with, yeah, like, he does. He had a bad combine too, good lord.
It shows up at the combine, and kind of the thing that I worry about is he wasn't able to improve on his numbers a little bit at his pro day,
right?
But he had to lose weight to do it. So there's not I don't really see like that there's evidence to where you can get him up to like 240-245 pounds, get him a little bit bigger without any real loss in athleticism. Because kind of the comparison that people have made for him is Chris Borland, but Chris Borland was 20 pounds heavier and still a better athlete. And you knew that, like, no matter what you thought of Borland, like, I wasn't super, super high on Borland, but you still knew that he was going to be a bully in between the tackles. Like, he would, like, being able to generate that force at 245-250 pounds, like, he'd be able to buck fullbacks and things of that nature, spill isolation plays and things like that. And like I said, Dawson kind of has that physicality and that size knock. He's 15 pounds lighter, and he just doesn't deal with contact as well. So my big question with him is, having those two knocks, both the size and physicality and the athleticism knock, is I don't know where you get snaps for him. And so, like, I was listening to Greg Cassell talk about him on Ross Tucker's podcast, and Greg Cassell thinks all the world of him. He thinks that he has like a little bit better short area explosion and everything than I do. But when Ross told him, okay, so what position is he in the NFL? And he kind of couldn't really have an answer, because he's not big enough and physical enough to really be a Mike or an inside linebacker. And he doesn't have the athleticism, and he doesn't manage flow well enough from the backside to truly be like a run and chase weak side linebacker. So I think he could be a special teams player, maybe. Maybe not. You'd probably rather actually have Ben Heaney in that role, because they're probably going to go in kind of the same area. They're kind of the same size, and they both have similar issues. Heaney's just a little bit better athlete. Dawson's got better read and react instincts. So, like I said, I just don't know where you would ever get him snaps in an NFL game and feel comfortable, because, like I said, he's just not big and physical enough to play that inside spot, and he's not really the athlete to – any running back worth his salt is going to consistently beat him to his if he's playing weak side linebacker in the NFL. So that's just kind of my hesitation with him.
We're talking to Eric Stoner, destroyer of dreams here on Nagler's Never Right. Let's switch gears real quick to the quarterback position, namely the top tier quarterbacks. Everybody's obviously torn these guys all up and down in regards to, you know, picking apart their game, everything off the field, etc. It baffles me, and I'm wondering if it baffles you, that there's any discussion at all about who the better prospect is when it comes to Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota.
I mean, if you're looking at it as just strictly on the field, I can see how it would be a debate for some people, but it's not a debate for me because, like, people are going to like how efficient Mariota is. He doesn't turn the ball over through the air. He kind of has a lot of sacks and fumbles, but he doesn't turn the ball over through the air where you see, like, you have multiple of, like, what are you doing throws from Winston in a game.
Right.
But in terms of how specific traits that they have that I believe are projectable to the NFL, Winston's, he's a much easier evaluation just because of what you see from what Florida State asks him to do and the types of throws that he's needed to make, the pocket management and how he's able to deal with, like, his space in the pocket getting constricted and everything, throwing with anticipation. Everything that you need to see from Jameis Winston is there, and you can see it in pretty much any game that you watch. Like, you might have some hesitations with the turnovers and him putting his team in a hole early and everything, but he's what I describe as, like, a high variance quarterback. He's on that Eli Manning axis, with Eli Manning, Joe Flacco, Ben Roethlisberger is, like, the height of that axis. But you're just talking about high variance quarterbacks where, like, the way that I describe it is, like, the mundanity of doing the right things and running the system to a T from play to play to play to play to play to play. Like, it almost becomes boring for them and they self-sabotage. But then when they're hitting their peaks and they find the weakness in the defense and things actually get more chaotic is when you see them hit, like, a peak where you just can't stop them. Whereas Mariota falls along, like, the efficiency quarterback line access. And, like, the peak of that one obviously is, like, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. The kind of mid-tier for that would be Matt Ryan. Like, I don't think Matt Ryan is quite the elite quarterback that everybody else thinks he is. Like, he needs things to be proper set around him.
Yeah, the table needs to be set, no doubt.
Exactly. And then, like, Alex Smith is kind of a lower tier even below that, but I think that Mariota falls on that axis, and they're more consistent from play to play, and when they can operate within the structure of their offense and they know what's coming and how to beat you and everything, like, they're perfectly fine. But when things actually get kind of chaotic for them, and when space gets constricted and you know, the defense fools them or whatever, they don't really do well operating off script. And people kind of think that Mariota can, because he's good at evading the first rusher and he can hit guys while scrambling and everything. But when the system kind of goes haywire for him and, you know, they're not getting the perfect play call in from the sideline against, like, and he knows exactly what the defense is going to run because they're aligned so early in the snap count against that offense, like, things get chaotic for him and he doesn't really respond well to that. So that's kind of the hesitation I have with him. Like, if you can keep everything, like, perfectly structured and aligned for, like, he would be great with Andy Reid, playing like that Kevin Cobb and Alex Smith style of quarterback. Like, he'll be great doing that. But I mean, if you get him and truly ask him to be the true volume passer and to carry a pass game, really, like, I just kind of have questions about that. So that's just kind of where I stand on those two.
And then obviously it's rare that you get two, let alone three or four starters out of a draft class. Do any of these guys this year pass the top two? Do any of them strike you as a guy who maybe if he goes someplace and sits and develops, etc.? I mean, I know the slander on these guys is unbelievable this year. I mean, it is a poor class. There's no doubt about it. But, I look at guys like Hundley and Petty, and I don't see terrible quarterbacks. I just see guys that are going to, you know, take some time to adjust at the NFL level. But is there anyone there, day two, day three, who you think, yeah, well, maybe?
I mean, Petty is the guy that kind of most resembles what a developmental NFL quarterback prospect would look like. He's got, like, a better arm and he's a better athlete than what you would think of, like, a quote-unquote system quarterback coming out of, like, the Baylor offense. But he's pretty big, he's pretty mobile, and he's got a pretty good arm. The only thing is that when things, like I was talking about with Mariota, when things get off script for him, mm-hmm. things don't go right early in the play count, he goes completely haywire. Like, Mariota, it's kind of inconsistent, but with Petty, it's more consistently bad when things don't go the way he has planned in his head. So, I mean, whether that's like a fatal flaw or a knockout factor, some people will argue that it is. Some people that will argue that you can, if you can like I said, kind of control things, keep this, the situation controlled for him. You can maybe get a developmental quarterback prospect down the line with him. I don't really know. I don't really feel good about that particular flaw, especially, I mean, after going through the Blaine Gabbert experience as a Jaguars fan.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah,
dear.
So guys that don't deal with chaos, I'm just very, very hesitant on. Hundley is kind of the opposite. Like, Hundley is what you would really think about when you think of, when you talk about a system quarterback, because that offense was so screen heavy, and his the play is like the, even the drop back pass play designs, it's very predetermined and very, very simple. Like, a lot of designed shot plays where he knows exactly where he's going with the ball down the field and everything. But I think he manages chaotic situations well for the most part. It's just very, like, with Hundley, you see the absolute best, like, he's a consistently inconsistent guy. Like, most quarterbacks, they're consistent at what they're good and what they're bad at. Like, right. Even if they're an inconsistent player, like, it's still, you still see them
do
the
same. You still see delineation in the strengths and weaknesses.
Right, exactly. You still see them doing the same things well and the same things poorly, where Hundley's kind of all over the place. Like, you would, and which exposures in which games you watch of him are so, like, they're so crazily divergent. Like,
right.
He can be like, he shows great pocket management and at some points, and like keeping his eyes down the field and finding other receivers. And then in other games, like, you see him throwing blind, and the like, their offensive line isn't very good, so he'll start getting impatient, and his internal play clock will be very, very inconsistent. Sometimes he'll hold on to the ball for too long. Sometimes he'll drop his eyes too early. So, like I said, you just have this huge divergence of good and bad with him. If he goes in the first round and a team expects him to play early, I don't expect him to work out. But if a team is really patient with him and can give him a year or two of development, I think that he would be your best bet. And he would probably have more upside in Mariota, like I said, because he kind of deals with chaos a little bit better, and that's kind of more of what I like. So I think if he gets some time, you can see him develop as a player down the line, and he would probably be the – I haven't even watched a ton of these quarterbacks, like, really, like, the top five maybe. Those five is really it.
Well, let me tell you, man, a lot of people are talking about – a lot of fans are anyway – that the Packers might possibly, late on the third day, take a quarterback. So I'm, like, trying to look at some of these
guys. Developmental guys.
Dude, I spent a night watching Brian Bennett. That was a depressing evening. Holy cow.
Yeah, and, like, I remember somebody told me, too, that Sean – like, I've seen – like, I haven't broken down Sean Mannion's game, but I've seen him play.
Right.
And the fact that he was, like, mentioned as a top guy coming into this year, and even some people are – he was the developmental quarterback flavor of the week for a couple of weeks, like, in February or March, where it's like, you know it goes through that period of the year when every single day three quarterback is kind of mentioned as, like, the guy who can maybe sneak up draft boards and go earlier than expected. And like, I don't, I think he's really, really, I don't know, he's quite bad. So
I couldn't agree more. That goes for a lot of these guys. All right, we're talking to Eric Stoner. Eric, you are an absolute legend for coming on and talking some football with me. You guys got to check it out. I'll throw everything, all the pertinent info, up on the site. Eric, thanks so much for your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Anytime you want to do this again, we can do it. And looking forward to the draft.
Absolutely. Awesome. Talk to you soon, man. So, big time thanks to Eric for coming on. Man, that guy knows what he is talking about. Like I said, his stuff is up, linked to on the website. Check out cheeseheadtv.com. The Nagler's Never Right post will be right there. And you can find all the great stuff he's talking about over at Matt Waldman's site. Next up, we're going to talk to Mina Kimes, the senior writer at ESPN The Magazine. All right, welcome back to Nagler's Never Right. Now we're going to switch some gears here and talk with the senior writer at ESPN The Magazine, Miss Mina Kimes. Mina, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I wanted to have you on because I read your piece on Kenny Easley, and I just absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great little story that kind of probably never would have gotten much of you know, much attention outside of, you know, maybe, you know, people who are diehard Seahawks fans, etc., which I have to warn our audience, you are, but we're not going to hold that against you.
Sorry.
How did you come about this? And for, you know, those who haven't read the piece, tell us, you know, the kind of the gist of it and how you stumbled upon it.
Sure. Well, so like many psychotic fans, sometimes in my spare time, I'll peruse eBay for the very few items of Seahawks paraphernalia that I don't already own.
Right.
So when I see something I don't own, usually it's like a troll doll or something really weird. But in this case, it was these newspapers, which had beautiful covers, and one caught my eye. It was a charcoal drawing of Jacob Green. So I ordered that one, and I think I ordered one with Kurt Warner on the cover, just for myself. And they were not that expensive. And then I was reading it, again, as one is wont to do, reading magazines from the 1980s about the Seahawks. And when I saw the masthead, I was kind of surprised because it said publisher Kenneth Easley. So I was like, huh, like, I know that name. And then when I turned the page, there was a publisher's note written by Kenny. So the year, but I should add that the issue came out was 1987 when he was still a player.
That's
so,
what blows my mind.
I mean, 80s, right?
Right.
I don't know. It's crazy. So I just call a bunch of people who worked for the magazine and sort of get the story on it.
And when you were kind of going through, you said you read the old issues.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of stuff did they cover? I mean, I just love the idea. I mean, and as a Packer fan, Ray Nitschke is the one who started Packer Report, you know, and there's a famous saying that, you know, when they were making their run in the 90s, that all the players on the team then thought that, you know, Nitschke covered them but just didn't think they were any good, thought they were a bunch of bums. Easley is covering a team that he was on. What kind of stuff did he cover?
Well, so it's a very featuresy kind of human interesty magazine, but there were also just stories every week on the game. There was analysis, and it was so funny because I was interviewing, you know, the editor in chief, which I mentioned this in the story. I also thought was so cool. It was a woman, which again, we're talking 1987, the baddest
football
dude
magazine
in the NFL. You know, one of the baddest dudes ever, in my opinion.
Yeah,
she's like, yeah, I'm definitely gonna hire a woman to run this. So anyways, I was talking to her about it, you know, doing analysis, and she was like, yeah, you know, he had some thoughts and would weigh in sometimes, which I thought was hilarious.
It's funny reading the piece about how, I guess, you know, you mentioned Linda Dean was the name of the woman.
Yeah.
And kind of the way when, you know, the life cycle of the magazine, you know, it's funny because you mentioned Kenny Easley being this badass, and then on the side he's running this magazine. With Troy Polamalu's retirement, obviously safeties and the Hall of Fame have come up, and you know, I think, you know, obviously I stumped for Leroy Butler because I'm a Packers fan, mm-hmm. but you can go back further to Kenny Easley's days and say this guy should be in before anybody.
Yeah, well, you know, with him it's obviously an issue of longevity, his career being cut short by his kidney issues.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I mean, at the rate he was going, what, 5 Pro Bowl appearances, 3-time All Pro. I think he was Defensive Player of the Year at least once, or maybe twice. Once.
Right.
Anyways, yeah, it is a hard run for safety. And you know, Easley is a funny one. I just saw his name actually on Twitter because he's announcing the Seahawks' first draft pick this
year.
Right,
right.
For 10 or 15 years, he was basically not he wasn't blackballed, but he was refusing to engage with the organization.
Yeah, and why is that?
Well, after his retirement, he sued them. You know, he had kidney failure. Mm-hmm. He sued them for issues because of painkillers. I think it was settled in the early 90s. So he pretty much didn't have any dealings with the team until really leadership flipped over.
Right. Well, and obviously, he was one of the greats when he was on the field. There's no question about that. You know, I found it funny. You mentioned at the end of the article how a staff photographer ended up seeing Kenny Easley at the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, and he remembered him. Both of them I interviewed about separately, and they were like, "Yeah, I remember that guy from the '80s." Funny, yeah. Rod Marr is a fantastic photographer. He was at the Times for a really long time, and he recently became the Seahawks photographer. So Kenny was the honorary captain this year, which was really cool for Seahawks, longtime Seahawks fans to see him out there.
Well, it's just an incredible piece. I'll definitely link it up on the website. And just wanted to get, like I said, I wanted to draw as much exposure to it as possible because I think it's just a great little sidebar of a story that you know, it's just one of those things you would never expect. And lo and behold, there it is.
Well, thanks so much. Well, I'll come back in week two. And
there you go. That's what I'm talking about. Smack talk. Oh, man, you Seahawks fans, I tell you. I love it. All right. Thanks a lot for the time, Mina.
Take care. Bye.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Big time thanks to Eric Stoner and Mina Kimes for joining me on Nagler's Never Right. Another episode in the books. Who would have thunk it? Four episodes in, I'm actually kind of enjoying this. Hope you are too. You seem to be. You're downloading it. You're streaming it. You're listening to it both here on CheeseheadTV.com and over on SoundCloud. Thank you so much for the support. Another episode coming up soon. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.